Episode 29, 14th of August, 2009. Venus. Hello and welcome to AstroTalk UK. AT UK is a not-for-profit amateur astronomy podcast produced by me, Gurbir Singh, an amateur astronomer based in the UK. For more information, see the About and FAQ pages at www.astrotalkuk.org. In size, mass and orbit, Venus is the nearest Earth has to a twin in the solar system. It's the brightest object in the sky after the Sun and Moon, hottest planet within the solar system, has a day longer than its year, named after the Roman goddess of love, and yet it has a deadly atmosphere. And it's the one planet that gets closer to the Earth than any other. In this episode, recorded in late 2008, Professor Fred Taylor, Jesus College, Oxford, talks about the Venus Express mission. Professor Fred Taylor from Oxford University, welcome to AstroTalk UK.
Thank you.
Venus Express, why is it called that?
Well, there are two reasons why it's called Venus Express. One is that it was a follow-on to Mars Express, in the sense that it was the second planetary mission. The European Space Agency did. Mars Express was the first. And it came into being very much as a follow-on to Mars Express, in the sense of using the same spacecraft over again, and the same team and everything to get it done for a very modest price. And the Express name on Mars Express relates to the fact that ESA developed a way of producing these missions quite quickly.
And from design to launch, it's only about 3 years?
That's right, yes, actually a bit less.
Incredible.
it is very quick compared to NASA. And because NASA recently tried to do quicker, cheaper missions and didn't really succeed. And they tended to get too many failures. Yeah. I think ESA has a somewhat different approach to NASA. Perhaps is a little bit less bureaucratic without quite so much paperwork and so on, which allows them to do things faster.
We should think it'd be the other way around, given the collaborative nature of ESA with all the different countries and different teams. But it's wonderful to hear that.
Yes. I think it has to do with the fact that ESA is a relatively young space agency compared to NASA. NASA used to do things faster and cheaper in the old days, but they've got a little bit bogged down recently.
The previous well-known mission to Venus was Magellan. Is there anything that came out of Magellan that Venus Express is looking to further investigate?
Yes, particularly in relation to the surface of Venus, because Magellan was specifically a radar mapping mission. It didn't have any instruments on board for looking at the atmosphere, which is what our focus is on Venus Express. It was entirely focused on the surface. But, of course, we're interested in the surface because the atmosphere and the surface are coupled in Venus's climate system. And the best example of that is the volcanoes. Magellan showed that the surface of Venus is covered with volcanoes that look very active. They have big lava flows coming from them. And if they are active at the present time, then that's a big factor in determining the composition of the atmosphere and an influence on the various factors that control the climate at the surface.
What kind of instrumentation do you need to detect and measure how active volcanism is on Venus?
Well, we're trying to do it two different ways on Venus Express. One is infrared mapping of the surface, where we can see hot regions, or relatively hot regions, and relatively cool regions. Where relatively cool is still pretty hot on Venus, of course, but cooler than the average and hotter than the average. And we're particularly interested in the regions that are hotter than the average because they might be regions of active volcanism where there's large flows of fresh lava on the surface. We're also looking at the composition of the atmosphere near the surface because the gases that come out of volcanoes have certain characteristic gases in them that high concentration, particularly gases with sulfur in them, sulfur compounds. we have a problem with that second method, because the instrument that was dedicated to that is not actually working. One of the other instruments does that kind of job, but so we can still do some of that kind of work, but it's not as good as we'd hope, because we lost one of the instruments.
Majority of the Venetian atmosphere is carbon dioxide, and in Earth's early history that came out of volcanism. So is it correct to say that volcanism on Venus is a major player in its climate?
Well, I think it is, but we're trying to first of all establish as a fact that it is. It looks very much like it, because a lot of active volcanoes would explain a lot about the current climate of Venus. We've never actually seen a volcano erupting. What we'd like to know is what the scale of the eruptions are at the present time. What we'd really like to know is how much of each different gas is being pumped into the atmosphere from volcanoes. Mm-hmm. And that will take a large number of sophisticated measurements. Venus Express won't achieve that on its own. It'll require additional missions to get that kind of data, but that's what we're heading towards.
It's been in orbit now for just over two years. What sort of things have you learned from Venus Express in that time?
Oh, lots of things. As I said, we're primarily studying the atmosphere, and there are sort of two branches to that. One is the climate, which is the global state of the atmosphere, and the other is the meteorology, which is the dynamics of the atmosphere and the features that we can see in it. Mm-hmm. And as far as the climate's concerned, we're zeroing in on an understanding of how the greenhouse effect can maintain the high surface temperature by measuring atmospheric composition, temperature, and cloud properties in particular. Mm. It's not very much like the Earth, which is a bit of a puzzle. So the next step is to say, well, okay, it's not the same, but it's going to be able to explain it in the same terms. It's all the same physics, what it comes down to. So we're gradually getting to grips with that, but that's going to be a longer term.
Although it's mostly carbon dioxide, in the Venetian atmosphere there's water, nitrogen, sulfur dioxide. Do you have any instruments on board Venus Express that may be able to detect any form of primitive life forms if they existed in the Venetian atmosphere?
No, we don't. When we were designing the payload, we there was a bit of fuss in the newspapers and so on about the possibility of life on Venus, because they do come forward with a theory that microbes might survive in the clouds. But we didn't think it was likely enough that it was worth devoting any of our precious effort to investigate. Also, it's not easy to do, of course. In order to investigate that theory thoroughly, you'd really have to descend into the atmosphere, which Venus Express doesn't do. It stays in orbit around the planet.
At the end of its life, Magellan was crashed into the surface of Venus somewhere. Currently, what's the prospect for Venus Express in the next few years, and how will it end?
That's one of the things we're still discussing. We actually have a choice. You can, depending on what orbit it's in when we run out of fuel for steering it, you can either be in an orbit where the height increases, so it would actually stay around Venus forever, move out to a stable orbit quite a long way away from the planet, or you can force it to crash. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot to be said for forcing it to crash, because you can make measurements on the way down and get some extra data. But at the moment, we're really just concentrating on keeping it alive as long as we possibly can, because we'd like to get a lot more data.
Yeah, so if you put it out on a very distant orbit, stays in orbit forever, or potentially, you've got solar power. So really, could it operate for a much longer period of time from that distant orbit?
Could do, yes. The factor that determines the end of the lifetime of one of these missions is not just fuel. We do need, I mean, you can run the instruments without any fuel, of course, and they'll sit there and work, but the pointing and so on becomes difficult if you don't have any fuel for the jets on the spacecraft that steer it and point it and this kind of thing.
Right.
But they could keep running, and not all of the instruments require pointing, so you can continue to take data. The reason that's not usually done is just money, because it's one thing to have everything working in Venus, quite another thing to have the data on the Earth in a form that you can use. That requires a team, which at the moment is about 30 people, working on tracking the spacecraft, receiving the data, processing it, getting it out to the scientists, that sort of thing. A team of 30 people working full time is quite expensive.
I know you have a wider interest other than Venus. You have done work on the Cassini-Huygens probe as well, Mars. And do you ever get to look at these objects from a telescope, perhaps from your back garden?
I have done, not from my back garden, but at various observatories where people have shown me things, but I don't do any observational astronomy myself. My background is really more in Earth science. We got into doing these kinds of measurements like Venus Express from an interest in the Earth's climate, which in our group at Oxford, we study with instruments on Earth satellites looking down on the atmosphere and observing factors related to climate and climate change. And many years ago, we branched out into doing the same thing at Venus and Mars, as you say now, from Saturn and Titan, Jupiter. And we're even now planning a couple of missions to bodies without atmospheres, even though our main interest is in atmospheres, because well, there's the opportunity to go to Mercury with the Bepi Colombo mission. And what we're interested in there is the ice at the poles, which seems to be present, so we want to take a close look at that, because we're interested in volatiles in the solar system, how much water there is in various places. Space is the most important aspect of that. And now it turns out that we've had a chance to build an instrument with our American colleagues for the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which is launching next year, which is a very large satellite orbiting very low over the moon to do mapping.
You mentioned earlier something about the British lunar mission.
Yes, that's an unmanned mission. The idea is to put a small satellite around the moon and then drop some probes under the surface, which would do things like measure seismic waves and moon quakes, if you like, and try to get more information about the interior of the moon. It's also possible that one of them will land in the polar regions, which we'd be interested in, because we're looking for ice in the polar regions. It would be useful to have a probe on the surface at the same time as we're looking for more of it. But it's harder to land on near the pole, and it may not be possible. It's still being looked at.
But that would be a British-only, as opposed to an ESA mission.
Yes. The British government's keen to develop British industry in the area of space technology, particularly small satellites. So they would see this as a high-tech demonstrator for British-built space hardware.
Professor Fred Taylor, thank you very much indeed.
This week's quote is my rather obtuse reference to the runaway greenhouse effect on the planet Venus. It's from Will Rogers, and it's what he says to his niece on seeing Venus de Milo in the Louvre in Paris. "See what will happen if you don't stop biting your fingernails?"
My pleasure.